Hi, thank you for joining us. I'm Christy Mernon. My guests this morning are Tori Williams. She is the Executive Director of AIM, the Alabama Institute of Medicine. And with her is Roman Reed. He is the Chairman of the Alabama Institute of Medicine. Tori is from Birmingham. Roman is from California. And they came to San Antonio for the World Stem Cell Summit. Tori's book is Inevitable Collision, the inspiring story that brought stem cell research to conservative America. And so it's recently out. And we're just going to talk about stem cell research. I know in some areas it's controversial. We'll let them explain that. And this is really enlightenment about stem cell research. So ladies first, Tori, tell me about you, and here you live in Alabama, and stem cell research is a huge force in your life.
Yeah, thank you so much for having Roman and I on today. It's always an honor and privilege to be here with Roman for any occasion to advocate for stem cell research. So my initial passion for stem cell research came from personal events surrounding family illness, my sister's ongoing battle with cancer, and my own diagnosis with polycystic kidney disease. Then a good friend of my family was in a tragic car accident, and he was paralyzed from the waist down. This young man, TJ Atchison, 21 years old, became the first participant in the world to be injected with human embryonic stem cells. Now, TJ, a Christian like me and from the Bible Belt area, was a little apprehensive about it because he didn't know what the community, our local community, would think about him participating in this trial. But, you know, after several weeks of just talking with, you know, a few of his close family members and friends, he knew that this was the right decision for him to make. He knew that he could be a trailblazer for research. And so he put that fear aside and decided to participate in the trial. So based on his factors, you know, his age, his injury level, he was able to participate. There were a couple of other patients who were screened and almost made it into surgery before TJ, but for one opted out for personal reasons, and the other had a medical issue to come up just hours before he was enrolled. So TJ became the first person in the world to be injected. And Roman here, he'll tell you about this too, but, you know, it was just a phenomenal group of people behind this trial. Mm-hmm. Decades of dedication to the field and, you know, raising funds to fund the trial. It was a very expensive clinical trial, and so that's how I really became involved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what happened at TJ?
Yeah, so TJ, this phase one clinical trial is not to have TJ walk again. That is not the goal. And with any clinical trial, you have to go through a safety phase first. So phase one would enroll, they have five participants who were injected with the stem cells, and all five of those patients have had no adverse effects. That means they've not had any, you know, we did no harm with injecting these cells into their body. And the fifth patient actually had some, you know, recovery with bladder bowel control. It's not consistent, so they can't say that it's actually cured, but she, you know, she can tell that there's a difference now. Mm-hmm. TJ's doing great. He started his own nonprofit organization, and, you know, we have also, so it's definitely spawned off, you know, extra support for the field, and that's really what it's about.
Okay, yeah. And then a law, you got TJ's law passed?
We did, yeah. So, so after TJ and I started working together to document his story, we knew that there was more that we wanted to do. You know, after seeing the challenges that people experience in their families and with their loved ones, we knew that we had to do something in Alabama because our biotech industry is really, it's now starting to grow, but there was no program in place in our state to fund researchers and to keep our researchers in Alabama instead of them being recruited away. So we knew we had to have some funding. That's what keeps the researchers there. And so I reached out to, I started researching different advocates across North America. And I said, TJ, if we're going to do this, we're going to have someone to help us. We can't do it alone. Mm-hmm. And so I was on the computer looking on social media, and Twitter was the place to go. And I stumbled across Roman, and I thought, he'll never respond. You know, this is just, you know, it's a far stretch for us. Uh-huh. Yeah. But you know what? I reached out to Roman and I inboxed him a private message and said, can you please help us? We need to contact, you know, we want to interview you. We would like to come to California and interview the researcher who developed this protocol. I want to learn everything I can about this. And Roman said, absolutely, please come. I'll coordinate all these meetings for you. And so my dad, you know, I was going through a divorce at the time and I have four children. So my dad helped me financially to be able to take this trip to California. And that was really the turning point for everything. thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I flew to California and met Roman, and Roman was just great. We had a 3-hour interview and talked about everything from television shows to really the heart of stem cell research and what he felt, what his vision was of what we could do in Alabama. Shortly thereafter, Roman flew to Alabama, and we had a small meeting in a little restaurant in Washington County called Casanova's Rendezvous. And I invited our local senator to come to the meeting. And in that meeting, we built the framework for TJ's Law.
And TJ's Law is?
TJ's Law, it's no longer in place. It was executed for 2 years, where we funded $400,000 per year to the University of Alabama at Birmingham, UAB. UAB is the research hub of our state. There are just hundreds of thousands of researchers who are there, and this was just such of a, you know, exciting time for them to know that now there are advocates in our state who are passing laws. They're raising millions of dollars to keep us here. It made them, you know, see that there are people who really care about mm-hmm. their research mm-hmm. and that it's needed. Mm-hmm. And then Roman, after that, you know, we really started thinking long term, like, okay, we've got to really put thoughts together and build something more.
Bigger.
Yeah.
Well, and then, so now let's meet Roman Reed. So you're out in California, and what was going on with you? What were you doing?
I've given my life to find a cure. September 10th, 1994, my whole life changed. I went from being the third highest ranked football recruit in the nation to being unable to move my hands or my arms or my legs. After I got hurt, the doctor came in 3 days after my injury and said, "Roman, I'm sorry, but you'll never move your arms, you'll never move your legs, and you'll never father a child." And I told him, "Get out of my room." I didn't believe it then. I don't believe it now. It's too important. What I have is actually a bruise. Everyone gets bruises. It does not make sense to me that I should have to live my life confined to a wheelchair because of a bruise. So what we did was, well, it was historic. My father and I wrote a letter to every single assemblyman and senator in all of California, and one man answered us, Assemblyman John Dutra. And what we did is we created Roman's Law, the Roman Reed Spinal Cord Injury Research Act. And it was an amazing law. So what we do is we put $1.5 million into a general account. Scientists make grant proposals, and we fund accordingly. We have funded 182 peer-reviewed medical breakthroughs. We have 451 scientists. And most importantly, we started America's first human clinical trials with embryonic stem cell research. We had a mountain of pressure on us. Because if we had done wrong, if we had caused cancer, if anything had gone wrong with our trial, the whole field would have been stopped. But nothing went wrong. Not even one adverse effect. Not even a zit. Everything went so right. It was just so important. And this started the field. And it's something that I'll take to my grave and be proud about with Dr. Hans Kierstad.
And here's where we explain what stem cells are.
So it's very important that we understand where embryonic stem cells come from. When a man and a woman go to a fertility clinic, they usually take 10 eggs. They fertilize those eggs, and hopefully, and most of the time, they're either successful in the first 5 tries, or they run out of money, since it's about $10,000 a try. What do you do with the other remaining 5 embryos? Well, by law, for 2 months, they're cryogenically frozen in an orange bag. And then 2 months and 1 day, they're thrown away. Why not crack those cells open? Use those embryonic stem cells to cure Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, cancer, spinal cord injury. Did you know 1 in 2 people will have cancer? We must find cures. It's the most important fight that we can ever fight. In 2009, all the corporate and personal income tax in America was roughly $1.6 trillion. That same year, I'm taking care of people like me, the chronically injured, and I don't take any government money and make my own, we spent $1.65 trillion. We will go bankrupt as a country if we don't find medical cures. This is our clarion call. This is our moonshot. America was the first to have a person walk on the moon. We should be the first to have our paralyzed walk again on Earth.
So stem cells, what is it about stem cells? What do they do? This is, I told you, I slept in biology. This is a, these are stem cells that they're from the beginnings of life as an embryo. And mm-hmm. what's different about that? Because we're made up totally of cells, correct?
Absolutely. So a stem cell is a building block of life. Everything in your body was once an embryonic stem cell. And it's just like computers. Once we learn how to codify and tell these embryonic stem cells to turn in what we want them to turn in, we can have cures. Everything in body started as a stem cell. When we learn all the codifying, we will have cures. What we did with Dr. Hans Kierstad was amazing. Dr. Hans Kierstad was the first in the world to be able to turn an embryonic stem cell into the wrapping of a spinal cord, which is called oligodendrocytes. I remember I held a rat in my hand. This rat had been completely paralyzed. We put Dr. Kerstad's stem cells in that rat, and that rat walked again. I've never been so jealous of a rat in my life.
Oh, you know, I mean, that's like a miracle, isn't it?
Yeah. It really is a miracle. I have a hero, and my hero's, she's a seven-year-old little girl. Her name is Gwendolyn Strong. It's a great surname because she's so strong, and she has what's called SMA, spinal muscular atrophy, and it's going to kill her. It's the worst thing that you can possibly imagine. Your child is paralyzed. Your child cannot breathe, cannot eat. Can I even tell you, I love you, Mom? It's horrible, but what we're doing is amazing. We've been able to turn an embryonic stem cell into the bioreceptor that goes out and grabs the amino acid that comes back. They lack a bioreceptor in their body that brings amino acids back. And how you make muscles is simple. You work out, you have perfect protein, and you have sleep. Now, if you have 100 units of amino acid A, 100 units of amino acid B, and only one of C, well, you'll have one because they have to work in a complete chain. And these poor, beautiful children, they're 99.9% perfect, and that 0.1% is going to kill them because they lack the bioreceptor that goes out in the bloodstream and grabs that amino acid to come back. And if you can't have that, you can never form a chain of proteins. And if you can't do that, then you can't make a muscle. So we've been able to turn an embryonic stem cell into that bioreceptor, and we will cure SMA.
So is that, at what point, you know, and Tori was talking about phase one of research, it's to find out that it's not hurting people. So at what point do you go from that discovery to actually in a person?
So we actually, right now, been able to go to human clinical trials. We have already been able to implant our stem cells into 5 people. And clinical phase one, on all clinical phase ones, the thing is do no further harm. Don't make the condition worse. And we did not have a single adverse effect, not even a zit. It went perfect. Mm-hmm. And now the FDA has just given us clinical phase two to up the treatment dosage. Because for clinical phase one, you take, say an aspirin, cut it into 10 pieces, and you give one piece. That's 1/10 of a treatment dosage. So you do not expect to have a return, an efficacy. But we did. One of the persons actually was able to get bowel and bladder control at 1/10 of a treatment dosage. Imagine what it'll be when we give that full dosage. And now we're in clinical phase two, so we're actually upping that dosage, and we'll be transplanting about 5 to 7 million cells. So we're getting closer and closer every day, and it just makes me so proud to be a part of it.
So after phase two, how many phases go through the process?
There are only 3 phases. Phase one is do no further harm. Phase two is half of the treatment, and phase three shows whether or not it will work. And we're getting very close to getting into clinical phase three. We have the science, we're ready, but you have to take time. Dr. Salk, who is the one who actually cured polio in the 1940s, he had 100% government support and unlimited funding. But still, from the day that he thought what would be the cure to the day he gave the cure, 16 years lapsed. It takes a lot of time. It's too important that we actually take this time. I remember when we first started this 20 years ago, people were saying, this will never work, this will never work. And now they're saying, why doesn't this work fast enough? When is the cure fast enough? There's been a paradigm shift because the cures are coming. Mm-hmm. The precipice of cure. We will look back on this age, 50 years, 100 years from now, and realize this was the dawn of personalized medicine. When no longer do we give someone a new prettier chair, but we give them a chance to walk again. Spinal cord injury will be a temporary injury, and I promise that.
Our guests today, Roman Reed and Tori Williams. Roman is the chairman of the Alabama Institute of Medicine. Tori is the executive director. And Tori's just written a book, Inevitable Collision, the inspiring story that brought stem cell research to conservative America. So, Tori, after you connected with Roman and he's mm-hmm. agreed to help you keep mm-hmm. the research in Alabama,
yeah.
you know, what's been going on?
Yeah, so we're very blessed to have their support because in California, Roman, as he explained, he and his father were very instrumental in passing Prop 71. Prop 71 was the beginning to CIRM, which is the California Institute of Regenerative Medicine. They're a $3 billion program in California. And I learned all of this through the research, but I knew that we may not be be able to be a $3 billion program in Alabama, but we've got to start. You have to start somewhere. So Roman, as I told you, he flew to Alabama and really mentored us and told us the model of what they did. And it was really just gaining constituent support, you know, reaching out to legislators. All this is explained in the book, too, for other advocates in other parts of the world that want to, you know, start a movement in your own area. We now have people calling us from Mississippi and from South Carolina and Georgia and Florida saying, how did you do it? If Alabama can do it, we certainly can do it too. So we were very successful in creating a nonprofit organization called the Alabama Institute of Medicine. Roman and I launched that in April of 2013. And it was last year during the World Stem Cell Summit, hosted this event in San Diego. So a group of our team from Alabama flew to San Diego. And we also brought, you know, some potential donors to our program, a young man, 28 years old, named Chris Drummond. Chris attended the summit with us last year, and it opened his eyes. He then saw what I had seen, this light bulb moment of there's an entire biotech community out there. And Chris said, you know, Tori, we have all of the resources in Alabama, but you lack funding. Chris has been very blessed to, you know, come from a family who, you know, support philanthropic efforts. And his father is world-renowned coal in the coal industry. They're one of the largest coal producing plants in North America. And so when we returned to Birmingham, I mean, we had several coffee, you know, shop meetings and brainstormed of ideas, but again, it was ultimately the funding. And so Chris wrote our program a $1 million check. And he said, I want to launch your program. I want you to be able to fund researchers. So that was the beginning. We now had a significant amount of money that we could fund researchers. And so immediately, Roman, chairman of our board and our supportive board of directors, we regrouped and we decided to do a call for applications. So this was all new to us. We had never gone through a process, but we had these great advisors who were helping us. We announced through a press release, it went out to the entire state of Alabama, to over 13 academic institutions. So we did a call for applications. We said, you apply for our funding, you know, and we will decide through a peer-reviewed panel of who will, you know, receive the funding based on your knowledge and expertise in stem cell research. That was the one guarantee. You had to use stem cell research in your study and not just embryonic stem cell research. You know, there are four types of stem cells. Is important to know. Okay, so there are human embryonic stem cells, there are fetal cells, there are adult cells, and then there's iPS cells. Okay, so in our bylaws for AIM, even though there is data to suggest that fetal cells are very helpful, that, in our opinion, is the most controversial. And so we have agreed not to fund any type of research that uses fetal cells unless it comes from a spontaneous abortion. Like myself, I had a preterm baby. She lived 5 days. And if I would have had the option to donate her cells, I would have done that. But, you know, there, as far as abortion, we're totally against that, and we don't fund that. But there's so much promise in human embryonic stem cell research where you can take these cells, as Roman said, from frozen embryos that are going to be discarded. Every year, over 500,000 embryos are thrown away in fertility clinics. That's been happening for the last 2 decades. So why not take these cells that are being thrown away in orange medical waste bags, use them not to destroy life, but to save life, to save our fellow, you know, mankind and our loved ones. And so we announced that in our call for applications that we would fund any type of, you know, stem cell research, regenerative medicine. And so we have funded now 3 projects at $900,000. One is specifically for sickle cell anemia. So over 5% of our world population has sickle cell anemia. So this is a huge target. So we were just happy that researchers in our state were actually using stem cell research. They're doing a lot with iPS cells. We funded another project for cardiomyocytes, which are the cells in our heart. So when your heart begins to fail, you have dead tissue and whatnot. This researcher created a heart in a box. So we funded that project also. And then we had a researcher who was recruited from Wisconsin to come to Alabama, and he focuses on a PODXL gene. It's like a trigger to turning an iPS cell into that embryonic state. So we've learned a lot, and we've also just been fascinated with the research and talent we have in Alabama. And so now we are a legitimate funding organization. We were proof of our ability to fund researchers, and we were good for our word. Over 90% of all donations go to research. Mm-hmm. And that's an astounding number to be able to fund that much research mm-hmm. off of our donations. Now we have three spinoff companies that have launched from our nonprofit. So we're growing a biotech community in Alabama, and it's just very exciting. We had members of those companies to attend this year's World Stem Cell Summit. Roman and I were just thrilled to be able to sign another agreement for a multi-million dollar deal in our state. We're actually relocating an operation here to San Antonio mm-hmm. for oncology, for cancer treatment. Mm-hmm. You guys here in San Antonio have a phenomenal biotech industry, and we're thrilled to partner with you. It's going to be a great partnership and collaboration, and also another operation in California that Roman's about to start in January called VivoSTEM. So this will focus on pairing our researchers, whether they're from California or Alabama or Texas, coast to coast to cures. It's going to take a multitude of different combinations to find that cure. So why not open up the gateways and connect each other to find these discoveries that are going to save our lives?
Well, you know, and I saw something recently about the genome project here yeah. where they are opening the research. That I know sometimes researchers are very protective and secretive, mm-hmm. but on something like this, there's a lot of worldwide collaboration. Is there on stem cells?
There really is. And one of the things that we did with Roman's Law, and we've been able to copy it, is if you take our funding, you have to come back next year and tell us what you did exactly and co-collaborate. You can't be reinventing the wheel. The first year that we actually gave out grants, five grants were basically the exact same thing that we had requests for. So people were doing the exact same experiment, not knowing that they were doing it. So we really had one person, and then everyone else was reinventing the wheel. Mm-hmm. So we had to have that collaboration. So therefore, we put that in the amendment in there that you will come back the next year and tell us exactly what you do. You had to be fully transparent and open and willing to collaborate. It's going to take a village to raise a cure.
Well, you know, and so San Antonio just had the World Stem Cell Summit. So what did you pick up? And I'm going to assume people came from all over the world to talk yes. about what they're doing with stem cells, what their visions are, what the promises are.
Yeah, the World Stem Cell Summit, again, it's the 10th year, so it was a special year. And for San Antonio to host, it was a great economic boost for your community here. We learned so much. Again, there were people from over 140 countries represented here. Aisles and aisles of different booths set up where you could go and talk to, some had CEOs that were behind the booth where you could talk and learn about their company. It's the network of mm-hmm. scientists, researchers, advocates, business entrepreneurs, investors. It's the community hub of biotech industry. And Bernie Siegel, who is the chair, he's the executive for Genetics Policy Institute. That's who hosts the World Stem Cell Summit. It was just a phenomenal experience last year. I knew we had to come back again this year, and always to come to San Antonio. It's beautiful. They had it at the Riverwalk Hotel, and so, you know, we saw the local culture too, and just beautiful area. But mm-hmm. again, yeah. that community network for collaboration, for connecting, and for finding cures was all right here at this summit.
And also your wonderful San Antonian himself, Henry Cisneros, won an award, and it was an honor to be able to speak to such a man who was so enlightened. And he actually started Biomed SA here in San Antonio, and it's just amazing. Everyone, when you really get down to understand what embryonic stem cells are for, you can't be against it. You cannot be against curing cancer or curing Gwendolyn Strong or having a paralyzed person walk again. It's just too important. Some fights you have to win, and we will.
So with stem cells, I'm listening to all this and absorbing it and trying to understand that if you can redirect a stem cell, because we all started as stem cells mm-hmm. and grew into, you know, every mm-hmm. part of our body,
exactly
our
right.
organs and our mm-hmm. skin. Well, our skin is the largest organ mm-hmm. and yeah. hands and bones, everything
sure.
like that. Mm-hmm. So if you can reprogram mm-hmm. or catch them embryonic stem cells and tell them, I want you to do this, and then put them in somebody like Roman who has yes. an injury yeah. and say, these are targeted directly yes. to your spinal cord to mm-hmm. regenerate.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. You're picking up really quick. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
Well, this really is, yeah. I mean, it's fascinating.
Yeah. It is.
And it does seem like it holds so yeah. much promise. Yeah. And there is research going on yeah. around the world.
Some of the brightest minds in the entire world are focusing on cure. Mm-hmm. That's so wonderful. It's not about having a nicer wheelchair. It's about getting us up out of these wheelchairs and walking again. It's too important. And for all these wonderful scientists that come in here in San Antonio, mm-hmm. I think it's just an amazing affirmation of your biotech community and where we're at as a society. It's so important. And we're so close.
Yeah, and you think to talk, to read, to turn a page in a book, all of that requires stem cells. But unfortunately, as we age, These stem cells, they either begin to die on their own. So when you talk about regeneration, you're actually trying to renew, regrow the cells that are dying, whether it's from an injury or from a disease that kills these cells. So it's like taking a, you know, like a light switch. You're wanting to turn them back on. You're wanting to direct them to go back to that part of your body where it can do as it did before to regenerate itself.
We can turn right now embryonic stem cells into beating cardiac tissue at the Gladstone Institute. Take a beating cardiac tissue, put it back in the heart as a Band-Aid, and that becomes part of the heart again, and you have a functioning heart. Mm-hmm. It's so important.
You know, and a lot of people say, well, why do you use embryonic stem cells or why do you use iPS cells? You know, there's not one particular kind. It's going to take a combination of all of the different types to really be able to find these cures. Mm-hmm. Adult stem cells are wonderful, but they're very limited in
their
potential.
I mean, you know, they've been around a while.
They have, and then they're just limited. You can't take an adult stem cell and turn it into a certain, you know, another type like a brain cell or a spinal cell.
Because it's already
differentiated into what it's to become. It's already designed and been coded mm-hmm. to become what it mm-hmm. is, as Roman mm-hmm. says, yeah.
Adult stem cells are fantastic for blood-borne diseases like leukemia, but unfortunately for neurologicals, they do not work.
And embryonic, it is what we were when we were, you know, being made.
New.
You, like iPS cells, you take an iPS cell, you can reprogram it to go to an embryonic state like. So you're trying to turn it into embryonic. But there's even to differentiate that, you're still at risk of, you know, is it going to be contaminated during that process? So you're trying to take something and make it something else. You're opening up the door for it to become contaminated. So embryonic is the golden standard. It's already in its natural state. It can be easily produced at a less expensive, you know, amount. It's not as expensive to make as iPS cells are very expensive because of the process. And it takes years, almost a decade, to get a good stem cell line from an iPS cell. Embryonic is very easy. That's why Dr. Kierstead from California decided to use embryonic stem cells for the trial that TJ participated in.
And embryonic stem cells, unlike adult stem cells, are very stable. On batch one of embryonic stem cells to batch 100, there'll be no change whatsoever, no difference, but there will be in adult stem cells. You don't want to put a treatment into someone and the next person has a different type of treatment. This has to be very standardized, and that's what's amazing about embryonic. They're so stable, they never change ad infinitum.
Now, what about legislation regarding stem cells? What's
the
state of that?
Just as we're doing with here today with you, we're educating you even, and we're not PhDs. We're laymen. We're average. I'm a school teacher at heart. You know, Roman. This is what we do. We advocate. So we have to talk to legislators. They don't know the science. You know, there's very few that are in legislation that have academic, scientific background. So it takes people like us to really learn it well enough to be able to go and talk to these legislators. Tell them, number one, they want to know about the economic boost. Is this going to help our community? Are we going to be able to open labs in our community mm-hmm. and hire, you know, researchers to come here, to recruit them from Wisconsin to come to our state? But they, you know, they all have families. Someone in their family has had cancer, diabetes, heart disease, Parkinson's, organ failure. It's in everybody's family. So then you get the heartstrings and say, this has happened in your family. Why should we not fund this research that could save your loved one's life?
Mm-hmm. And I believe everyone does things for the right reason. They have good hearts and they want to see someone cured of cancer and someone want to see cured of Parkinson's or paralysis or ALS. But even if you don't, the fiscal impact of stem cell research is amazing. Did you know when we cure cancer, and we will with stem cells, we will save the world $50 trillion. Every child could be educated, fed, housed. What would the world be like with $50 trillion more dollars and people to be off of these healthcare and bedridden, but to put us back to work, but to put us back into paying citizens? It would be an economic boon unlike the world has ever seen, and it would feel so wonderful to be able to see a child raise up again out of a wheelchair and walk away like Gwendolyn Strong. Christopher Reeve once said, one day, Roman and I will stand up from our wheelchairs and walk away from them for forever. Now, that didn't happen for our superstar, Christopher Reeve, but it will happen, and we will walk again.
Yeah. How about that? You know what? We are out of time, unfortunately. This has really been a fascinating half hour. Our guests are Tori Williams and Roman Reed from AIM, the Alabama Institute of Medicine. Tori's book is Inevitable Collision, which has the story about stem cell research. And if people want more information, obviously there's your book, where they can get it online?
We have a website, exactly, for Inevitable Collision. So it's www.inevitablecollision.com. And then we have links from there that we're on social media. You know, Roman and I met on Twitter. We love to tweet, and we'll respond to you. If you're an advocate out there, if you're a loved one that's caring for someone who's with a disease or injury, please reach out to us. That's what we're here for. And then our Alabama Institute of Medicine, it's www.aimforcure.org. We'd love to connect with you and help you in any way we can.
And I just want to say thank you again to you. You can have the greatest message in the world, but what good is it without a vehicle to get it out to the people? So thank you for having us here today.
Oh, it's
absolutely.
My pleasure. Thank you.